Welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast. You already know who we are. We wouldn't be here, so let's not waste any more time. Here's Bradley.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Brad and Botty Podcast. Hello, Botton. How are you, my friend?
You know, we should pronounce that correctly just once. It's Botton.
Botton. Botton. Yeah. Can I say we are in the midst of the greatest time in sport. The two greatest words are happening with the NBL and the greatest words in the world, two of them, Game 5. I love it, Botty. Talk to me.
Yeah, look, I actually didn't think it was going to go 5 games. I'm in the minority that thought that New Zealand would win game one. I've tipped that they would win game one. I then expected them to win game two, to be 2 zip up, obviously, go back to Sydney, lose game 3 and win game 4. I thought it'd be wrapped in 4, and I thought the Breakers would cause what would be on the mainland considered an upset, but I wouldn't have considered an upset at all. So once the Kings won game 2, I thought the dynamic changed tremendously, and I thought, you know, the Breakers are done here.
Well, they blew that one. They blew it. Yeah, they had the win. But let me say, let's bring in someone that knows all about New Zealand basketball, okay? All what's going on. This guy is, well, what can you say? He's a hero in New Zealand, the voice of New Zealand. He was born as an American New Zealand in America, then obviously moved out to New Zealand's, played a number of teams, and he's been outstanding. He has got 4 New Zealand championships. He's been in an NBL New Zealand All-Star team. He then played in for the Breakers as well, West Sydney, Wollongong, Gold Coast, and then a number of times in New Zealand. He has represented New Zealand at the Commonwealth Games in 2006, and if I'm not mistaken, that's where they won the silver medal. But right now, we know him as the voice of New Zealand basketball, as you said, and he is joining us. He's done an outstanding job in the commentary of the playoff series, and it is my most welcome to Casey Frank. Casey, thank you so much for joining us.
The pleasure is mine, boys. Catch your podcast occasionally, and always enjoy it. Really happy to be here and take part.
Yeah, now look, before we get to the Grand Final Series, which is going to be the main topic of discussion, I'd like to know how you went from the US to New Zealand, how that first transpired, what you were doing, you know, how did that come about?
Well, interestingly, my first trip down under was to Australia. I came over as an import at 22 for the Cairns Taipans, but Guy Malloy let me go just before the season started. I'm trying to think. Somebody from Townsville dropped 40 on me, and they decided he wasn't up to it defensively. So back home. It was in a preseason game, so that was a wrap in Guy Malloy's first year. But then I had a former coach who's now NCAA coach, Jamie Dixon. He was a big-time player down here in New Zealand. He averaged – I played here a couple years, averaged 40 a game back before the skill level I think was quite up to it. But they called him up. I came down. I was playing in Sweden. I mean, a really funny story is my season in Sweden had just finished. So I was 24, so having a little bit of a party. I got a phone call on someone's couch the next day, picked up my phone, answered it, and said, "Hey, you want to come to New Zealand?" I was like, "Sure," and hung up and went back to sleep. And I was like – was that real?
I need some detail.
Do you know what? As you're talking, that's how I hear your commentary. Yeah, it's okay, mate. No problems. It's just how you come across. It's brilliant.
That was pretty much the gist. 3 days later, I was in New Zealand, and then obviously I really enjoyed playing down here. At my second season down, I met who became my eventual wife. So I fell into that same trap so many imports do. Met my missus, have a couple kids, and now I'm Kiwi for the long haul.
Let me go back one step, though. I'd love to know how you started with basketball. I want to hear about the family and everything. But obviously, in the States, was it family? Talk to us. How did it all start?
Well, my family was always football players, American gridiron. My grandfather, he actually played in the NFL back in the 40s. He was an All-American. Wow. My father was a high school All-American. And then went to college but got caught up in the 60s. So he missed out on the rest of his career. But it was always gridiron. I loved gridiron, loved playing it. But I think I was about 12 years old and I met a kid who was a really good friend of mine, ended up being my best friend through high school. His name was Sonny Withron, and he loved hoops. I just started playing every day in his front yard with him and just playing all the time. Loved it. And so suddenly I was just, everybody else was going to parties, going to this. And I was just in the park. I was playing every chance I could in Phoenix growing up. And then, Just fell in love with the game and really, you know, for me, fell in love with the way that I could possibly better my situation, get a college education, all that. And glad that's a path I went on, because here I am in an island in the Pacific, not what you think you're going to end up when you're in Phoenix, Arizona.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and actually, not a lot of guys realize, and girls playing the sport in America, that they have the option of going overseas. For a lot of people, when your college career is over, that's it. Your basketball career is over. So you must have had some level of awareness that, that the rest of the world was there waiting for you.
Yeah, thankfully, our coaching staff had some reasonable connections with players overseas and understood that that was an option for me. You know, obviously, the dream was the NBA, and I ended up going to the Moody Bible Institute for the pre-draft camp, and I went to the Desert Classic, which they used to have for the top 40 seniors. But that's actually where I got noticed to go overseas, and went to a couple places, started in France, but popped around a few times, had some strange stories, was going to go to Israel right before 9/11. And then 9/11 happened. I said, I don't think I want to be in Israel.
Yeah, let's not go there. Yep. Okay. Yep.
And so that was essentially just before I got down to New Zealand. And once I got down to New Zealand, I was just super comfortable with it. Love playing here and able to do a lot of other stuff as well.
So let's stay there now. So New Zealand, if I'm right, your first NBL contract is with New Zealand. So, and that was when they first came into the league. So talk to me about that.
Yeah. I mean, it was a real exciting time. The Tall Blacks had just come off their, you know, rising 2002 world champs, where they finished in the top four. And that squad with Piro, with Paulie, with Dylan, Phil Jones, Kirk Penny, all these guys who, the majority of whom played in the New Zealand offseason, I just really gelled with. Really enjoyed playing with them, liked playing with them. And then there was the Breakers were having open tryouts, and Jeff Green was the coach at the time, and I thought it was for Kiwis. Then he called me up after the first open tryout and said, why didn't you come? I was like, well, I thought it was just for Kiwis. I didn't know you guys were looking for an import. And he said, well, you should come through and see how you're going. So I did, ended up on that first team. Now, it was an enjoyable time. Not the most professional of times for that squad. We all lived in the same hotel on the North Shore in Takapuna. You know, 14 guys on two different floors. The only players there were Dylan Boucher and Paul Henare. So we got up into some hijinks. And unfortunately, after that first game where we had an explosive first quarter against the 36ers, after that, it was mostly downhill.
Yeah, I remember that game. I was there to watch that game, and it was terrific. The whole the way the game was presented and the excitement generated, obviously, in New Zealand by the Breakers playing in this league was terrific. And then to win in such a close game and to come out on top, it was wonderful for you. I was sitting there on the laptop going, oh, damn, Sixers. Because they did the same with the Singapore Slingers. They went over there, played their first game, lost that. The Sixers were sort of like everybody's, every new team's bunny, you know. But, yeah, and then so what happened? You stayed with the Breakers for how many years?
Well, things weren't going too well with the franchise. Like I said, there were some issues in the front office with the level of professionalism. Jeff Green ends up fired, and the new coach comes in, Frank Arcego at the time, and he decided to switch me out. And I had some offers to go back to Europe at that point. But like I mentioned before, I had met my wife, Mia, who at the time was still my girlfriend. But I was like, you know, I'm going to stay here for a while, check things out. It wasn't too long before the New Zealand season started. And by the time that second season hit, I was basically halfway to getting my passport. There was some interest from Tab Baldwin and the rest of the Tall Black squad on getting me in to fill that naturalized spot once Ed Book was done. So I ended up staying. I think my first stint with the Breakers was about 11 games. So I'm pretty fortunate to still be associated with the team.
Yeah. You then signed, and I remember this, with West Sydney. But I'm still thinking that was as an import, was it not? Because you hadn't naturalized yet.
Yeah, that was actually just right before I had gotten my passport to get through. Right. I went to West Sydney, and I think Waco still must make me his favorite import, because when I was over there, we were 2-1 in three games. His best record at West Sydney at the time. But I did get a call from my immigration lawyer after that third game, and he said, Casey, if you want a New Zealand passport, you can't be working in Australia. So I was like, that's a good point. Yeah. I got back, and I finished my passport stuff. And then was fortunate enough to get a contract again.
I'm really curious to know, because I have had some friends of mine, and for our listeners, to be an import is one thing, but then to have an import that's naturalized, you now go from going, oh, can we use Casey as an import, which only had two spots back then, not three like it does now, to every team in the league has an option to get you. You would have been getting phone calls left, right, and center, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it was. There was a lot of interest. I was real fortunate. It was right on the back. You mentioned earlier the Commonwealth Games, so I got essentially got my passport the week before the Comm Games started. Crazy timing that.
Yeah,
appreciate that, New Zealand government. But so I got, and I had a really good tournament. Played well against the Aussies, who unfortunately pipped us at the post for the gold medal. But I did. I had some options to go different places. I ended up signing in Wollongong with Brendan Joyce. You know, they had a great success as a program a couple of years prior. You know, they weren't too far off winning the championship, playing with guys like Saville, Matty Campbell. It really appealed to me. And also Tony Rampton was there at the time, who I was really familiar with, the tall black. And, you know, like I said a couple of times, you know, I'm just a kid who grew up mostly in Phoenix. So the idea of going to live on the beach in the Illawarra, that was pretty enticing.
Yeah, well, so you've decided to settle it in New Zealand, so obviously you love it. What is it about New Zealand, that other than me, that makes you want to stay there and not go back to the US? Because, you know, we only a handful of guys stay these days, and they always seem to love it. But most of, you know, we're much more transient as a league than we used to be. Back in the early days, guys would come, they'd play, and they'd settle down here, as you have. But now that's now that we're getting sort of like someone that's on the NBA fringe, you come place for a year, disappears. So what was it about New Zealand itself that attracted you? Is it the fact that I have guns everywhere, or a big farmer doesn't run the country, or you didn't need therapy?
Well, that's certainly part of it. I mean, I guess I've probably done more introspection about this than a lot of guys. But, you know, I moved around a lot as a kid. I always wanted a place to belong. You know, there's go through things. Like, there was one school year I went to six different schools in three different states. Wow. So up until I got to high school, I never was in one place for very long. I got that for high school, college, but my college experience, that belonging was something that once I left, I was really searching for. And I came to New Zealand and I found that. There was guys on my Auckland Stars team, Lindsay Tate, Mike Homick, who spent a bit of time in the NBL as well, and Aaron Olsen, Dylan Boucher. These guys just really started feeling like a family to me. And on top of that, I mean, New Zealand's just really easy living. You know, the States was always a grind. It wasn't really a place I ever really felt comfortable, but there was never a time I didn't feel comfortable in New Zealand. And I think the first time that I really decided I want to stay here was for like a Phoenix, nothing but desert everywhere, sand. One day I was driving up north, I came over, I just never saw anything greener than New Zealand. And I was like, you know what? I'm staying here.
Well, I need to bring in the hard questions now, because at Brad and Body, that's what we do, right? So the hard questions. So this is going to be a dual question, because we know that you are the man in New Zealand. But if I'm not mistaken, you have played a villain in a Bollywood movie, and you featured in Celebrity Treasure Island. Casey, what is going on?
Well, like New Zealand's smaller population, less celebrities to pick from. the Celebrity Treasure Island, that was a good knock on from Dylan Boucher. They hit him up first, and he couldn't do it because he had some commitments at the time. But they wanted a basketball player, and Dylan was like, you know who'll do it? It was Casey. So they gave me a call. I was like, sure, I'll be great at that. Turned out wasn't so great. First guy sent home.
Really?
Geez, even Andrew Gaze lasted longer in Dancing with the Stars, mate.
Gaze's Dancing with the Stars, though. He had that big smile every time he came on a pirouette.
So wasn't that hilarious? Fun. Yep.
But the Bollywood movie, you know, that's actually one of the reasons that I was able to stay in New Zealand is I got involved in the film industry a little bit. They film a lot of stuff over here, and a lot of those movies they need big dudes for. So I'd been in a core extra in a couple movies like Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. So I just worked for like 2-3 months in the off season doing that. And my comic I mentioned before, he actually became he took that further once he finished playing basketball in New Zealand or Australia. He became one of the most internationally renowned stuntmen of his size. Wow. He's doing stuff like he was a body double for the Mountain in Game of Thrones, stuff like that. So he's in some big time movies all over the world. And he was going to India to do this for a time, and they wanted a body double for him so he could play his own twin. He asked if I would do it. I was like, man, that sounds awesome. Good to go to India, did a movie for 6 weeks. That's great. And thankfully, when I got there, the production ran out of money. So then I had to become not his twin brother. I got to be myself. They didn't get to use all the digital effects to wipe me out. But yeah, man, that was quite the experience.
That's
being
great.
In India in general, but seeing the size of that production and how excited it was that the key actor in that is a guy by the name of Hrithik Roshan, who's got, I think about 60 million. I don't know. It was many millions of followers online. So good fun.
Wow. Fantastic.
Sounds like your movie career went pretty similarly to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's.
Just about. At least got to get a kick in on Bruce Lee. I did not get any kicks in. I just got the shit kicked out of myself.
Look, let's move on.
Commentary can become the voice. How did that happen?
I mean, also just, you know, life is full of sliding doors. And this one was my MBL career in Australia. This was around 2010. I just had a really poor season with the Gold Coast, and I just wasn't getting a lot of offers that were going to make it worthwhile for me to go to Australia. You know, it was lower ends of the salary around that time. And so I was looking around for something to do, and I was previously the Junior World Cup had been here in New Zealand. So a lot of players gotten in on the commentary thing. Dylan Boucher was one of those, and we were away with the Tall Blacks for the Turkey World Cup 2010. Yeah. And I asked Boucher, I was like, well, who's doing the commentary for the Breakers this year? And he just goes, oh, they're looking for a guy. Want me to throw your name in? I was like, yeah, man, throw my name in. That'll be great. You know, and so that's something to do. I can check that out, see if it happens. Went in for a tryout, which strangely I got to call my own game off tube. So I made myself really good in the highlights. But I got to do it. And, you know, when I listen back to the early stuff, I'm glad I got all the reps I did, because the early ones weren't quite as good as I thought they were back then.
Man, I know it looked very similar path where, you know, I just got asked because there was no one else, you know, and then you saw it right. So, and I loved it. And I look back now, and I mean, I'm crap now. Jeez, I was bad then. Casey, you've been, I've worked my way up from real crap to just sort of crap. Casey, let's ask about this series. What a series it's been. Obviously, you know, New Zealand coming out going bang, and then Sydney getting the next two, and like Boddy said before, like they blew that game too, you know, that was really one that they should have won with the injuries and where they were at. But then Sydney came back, good game three. Game four, New Zealand just belted the crap out of Sydney, and I thought they were tremendous the way they did that. How are you seeing it, and what do you see tomorrow night?
It's been interesting, man. It's these are two really evenly matched teams in a lot of ways. You know, obviously Chase is doing a lot of talk about the physicality, but Sydney's as physical as anybody in this league.
Absolutely.
You know,
really big.
And, you know, actually coming into the series, I tipped Sydney. I thought, having seen them during the course of the regular season, especially in New Zealand, they really physically dominated the Breakers. It's a real tough matchup for Derek Pardon and Jarrell Brantley. But then in that last game of the regular season, they figured some stuff out. A lot of that to me is William McDowell White hitting that, being able to score from that free throw line area on the runner.
That floater, man, that is tough as hell.
I mean, when he's hitting that, and if he's hitting the, you know, I think he's shooting something around 38% on coming off the on ball and pick and rolls that are free right now. If he's shooting like that, he's hitting those. I mean, to me, he's an NBA player, but that's another story. But if he's hitting that runner with consistency, it really changes everything for New Zealand. But when he's not hitting that, New Zealand has that a real persistence of not scoring the ball at times this year. There's just to times they just go through real purple patches where they can't really figure out how to bend defenses. So through four games, it's been a hell of a chess match. The physicality is what's been most impressive to me. But that game four, it seems to me like New Zealand figured something out. You know, they found a way.
How much did it surprise you, though, Casey, that they bounced back? Because after dropping two in the way that they did, the dynamic of the whole series changed. Sydney gets game three. They're coming in, you know, playing with the house money now. And I don't think too many people thought New Zealand was going to be able to bounce back, because there was a certain acceptance in their body language late in game three that this was over. Now, maybe that was just game three is over, obviously. That was what it turned out to be. But were you confident going into four that, oh, they can get this, or were you thinking this is over?
Well, it's interesting talking to the commentary team after the games. You know, game one, everybody would say, well, I don't know how Sydney gets this. They're not going to get back to the series. And then you finish game three, and it's the same thing. I have no idea how New Zealand's going to get back into this. And I wasn't confident coming through. But then I talked to a couple players in the airport. I talked to Jarrell Brantley. I talked to Thomas Abercrombie, you know, and man, I put a lot of this down to Modi Moore, but he's just got these guys really sailing a steady ship. You know,
he's been awesome. He has been awesome. Yeah.
Just good. Like, and they exude a real confidence. You know, Jarrell Brantley told me, this is where the series is supposed to be. It's supposed to be 2-1 right now. We're going home. We win that. We got a chance to win. And you know, you hear players say that sometimes, you think, yeah, you're a little bit full of shit. But this time I was like, he actually exuded some quiet confidence, and it's the same attitude this team has had all year. And, you know, thankfully I didn't turn my back on him. I still went out there with a lot of praise, and I thought they might get that one done. They did. And now, you know, game five, what's better? What's better than that?
Two greatest words. I hear you. All right, Casey, it's that time of the show, right? And this is where we throw some names at you. So these names will come from the past, and all you've got to do is give a word, a sentence, the first thing that comes into your mind when we say these names. Now, I'm going to start it. Perro Cameron.
Oh, just physical, man. Actually, the word for Perro is mana. That man, you get in that dude's presence. He was the biggest, strongest man I'd ever come across. He used to hold me on the floor with one finger.
All right. Paul Henare.
Tough. Just as tough a dude as I've ever come across. Some of my favorite Paulie memories is when you'd get caught on a switch in a game and they'd have a big down low with Paulie. And somebody would start saying, "We got a mismatch." And I would just think to myself, "No, you don't."
And can I say, one of the best coaches that should be coaching in Australia, surely missed.
Enjoying his time in Japan right now. I think
I know. Yeah, I know.
One of them.
It's tough.
Yeah, I hear. I'll throw someone else. Glenn Saville.
Man, just an ultimate competitor. You know, he went out there. Everything was about the game, about being prepared. And he was just such a smart player to be on the court with. He really understood where everybody was supposed to be, what everyone's job was. And now, of course, maybe it's a little bit easier when you're that alpha guy and everybody's job is to sort of help you. But he was a great captain, a great leader, and I really, really enjoyed my time with Seve.
Nice.
All right, I got Thomas Abercrombie.
I'm a little bit different because he came up when he was a little boy, you know, when he came up. I don't know if I should say this one, but, you know, during a tall black camp, I did take Tommy to his first strip club. But when he was still in high school, I'm not sure he was 18 yet, so that one's on me. But, you know, just professional is the best way to put it. You know, he always has done his job. There's nothing else extracurricular about it. The concentration is on the game and on what he can do for the team. And, you know, what a fantastic, you know, I may, you know, what thinking about it, it should be a Mr. Breaker, because he's been there.
Nice.
His number will hopefully go up in the Raptors very soon, but maybe not till after Mika Bakonis.
Yeah. What the news? You mean the Tasmanian guy?
Yeah, the Jack Jumper. Just a quick segue on Tom. Are you at all concerned about his offense in this series?
I mean, I am. His career, his contribution is at a different level now. You know, he's had some great looks, and these are looks that we've gotten used to Tommy hitting, especially from three. You can see probably lost a little bit of quickness off the bounce. He's having trouble sort of getting some clearance by guys, and the elevation is good, but it's really struggling at the rim with Suarez and Hunter in there. You know, coming into game four, I thought that himself, Rob Lowe, those guys were going to have to step up to get this game done. Little did I know that Brantley and Brown Jr. were going to combine for 43.
Yeah, unbelievable. Can I say that if anyone is watching the post game, get Modi's comments on Abercrombie. If you listen to that, what he said was phenomenal. He is, when you say Mr. Breakers, that's pretty much what he was saying. So yeah. He's a huge part. My last one I'm going to throw at you, Kirk Penny.
Oh, scoring machine. Kirk, he just had a knack for it, man. Understands angles, understands how to come off of screens. I mean, one of my funnier memories about Kirk is he was in a stretch where he scored 40, like four or five straight times for the Tall Blacks. He comes into the hotel room after the game. He had 42. And he goes, Case, we got to figure out a way. Get me a few more looks.
Said like the pure shooter. Yep.
But a great look. And you don't realize how big he is. You know, he's 6'5", 105 kilos. And that really enabled him to clear some space down there.
Yeah, I got up close with him when he went to Illawarra. That was the first time because I was doing a lot of commentary down then. And I was like, wow, with him and Kevin Lish, man, that was so much fun.
Yeah, that was a scoring machine.
My favorite memory of his is when he retired. And I don't mean that the way it sounds, but the way that the Breakers boys gave him the haka.
Yeah.
And that was one of the most emotional things I've ever seen. I was in tears watching that. It was just brilliant. And I just quickly want to ask you, how do you go with doing the haka when you're with the Tall Blacks? Like, how do you feel about it? Do you really embrace it, or you think, I've got to do this because everyone's doing it?
I embrace it. I love it. I love the culture down here. Thankfully, it's to do the haka the first time right before my first match internationally. I had to do it by myself, shirt off in the hallway to the team.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
You can do it anywhere. But, we do put a lot of work into it. You know, we finish training and we have haka practice, especially for the guys that haven't done it before. You get the actions down. The current haka, Te Tekeakatia, it was partially brought into the fold by Pora Wanitana, a great ex-Tall Black, ex-breaker, played for the Sixers as well. And it's got a lot of meaning behind it. You know, you say the words, they're in Mori, but one of the things that we do is we tell everybody this is what the words mean. And for the Tall Blacks, there's the Tekahitia tree is a big tree, but it doesn't look the biggest, but what it has is big, strong roots underneath the ground. And so when we're the Tall Blacks, what we're saying is it doesn't matter how much wind blows our way, the feel, our roots are going to keep us strong, and our roots are the Tall Blacks, the past, all of that. And it's it's a special club to be a part of, and I'm very fortunate to be in it.
Casey, we can't thank you enough. I could speak all day. Your passion for New Zealand is unbelievable, and you know, let alone you're the voice, you're everything else. You're just a great guy, and that's what it comes across. So we couldn't be thankful enough. You are not a great guy until Thursday, because as a Kings fan, we'll deal with that later on. All right, yes, buddy, it had to come out. But mate, thank you so much. Loving what you're doing in the commentary team. Love what you're doing. Thank you so much for joining us and giving us just a very small part of your basketball journey.
The pleasure is mine, boys. Always good to have a yarn about hoops, about history, and love your work. Just really thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Well, we can't thank Casey enough. What people didn't realize there is obviously he's been flying to and from Sydney and Auckland and doing what he's got to do. And he's just told us he's come down with COVID, the poor bugger. So you could, I don't know if people listen, but you could hear it in his croaky voice. He will not be at game five, the poor bugger, the one game you want to be there. Yes. So it's such a shame, but you wouldn't have heard it in his voice. He's so passionate now. And we just want to say thank you so much to give up his time, even though the way he's feeling, second to none. So thank you. Body, let's talk. I want to talk WNBL first. We're going to come back to the NBL, all right? So let's talk WNBL first. I am loving this series. I cannot see anyone beating Townsville. I do think the Lynx will beat the Boomers. The Flyers will get the Boomers, right? I do think they'll get that. And I do think it'll be Townsville versus Southside, but I can't see anyone beating Townsville in that series. Your thoughts?
I'm not sure about any of that.
Okay. I mean, no, good.
Townsville's on a 14-game winning streak.
Yeah.
That's nothing to be scoffed at. You know, they're going great guns. Wiped out the Lynx in two straight. They sit back and watch Flyers and Boomers beat the bejesus out of each other. I would be surprised from here if Townsville didn't win it. I'm not 100% sure about Southside and Melbourne because I think Melbourne changed the dynamic dramatically in game two to force a game three. I think Southside reminds me a little bit of Sydney, which is probably why you like them, because they act as though they're entitled and they complain and bitch about pretty much every call, which, you know.
What's Sydney do that? No, they don't. What are you talking about?
There's.
What,
there's,
just because the Kings played against eight people the other night? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, what a joke. And before that, he said after game one loss, he said, oh, my team has been shit for months. Well, mate, Chase, you're the freaking coach. If they've been shit for months, you should be sacked. Okay.
Back to Southside, buddy. Back to Southside.
All right. Sorry. Not a fan. Southside, I mean, I love them when they're playing well and when they're focused. But, you know, when they're like Matty Rocci has never not complained about a call. And that sort of stuff gets you know, it just gets up on those after a while. You just feel a change. Just get on with it, you know. Get on with it. You know, I thought Melbourne were physical and strong in game two and really made a statement.
I don't disagree with you. I just I can just see them beating it, but I don't think it who it matters goes against Townsville. Like, I could see Boomers winning, but I don't think it will matter. And well done to the Boomers as well. You know, Chris Lucas taking over, you know, from doing what he's had to do. We had him on at the show at the beginning, and, you know, there's no tougher thing to take over from a guy that won it. And then to even get back in this position, well done. You know, that's amazing. I want to go straight into your Nodge Nasty. Let's go straight into that, please, because that's got a little bit to do with what we were just talking about.
Well, my nasty is the fact that the NBL and the WNBL don't communicate clearly, because Wednesday night we have 7:30 in Melbourne, Southside Flyers hosting the Melbourne Boomers in the deciding game of the semi-final series, and we have game five in Sydney at the same time, between the Kings and New Zealand Breakers, which is going to be the game that most people are going to tune into. Now, the WNBL left it a bit later to make their finals announcement. They're the ones that need to be flexible. This is not a question of which is the superior product.
No, you can't be.
Man versus woman or any of that BS. This is simply, they made the decision a couple of weeks ago, they should have moved that game to Tuesday or Thursday, whatever, as soon as they knew there's going to be a clash, because now basketball, it's going to impact. No question it's going to impact. And I just think it's so amateurish. It's typical BA, who run Basketball Australia, runs the WNBL. It's typical of Basketball Australia not to know what the hell's going on in the world around them.
I feel for everyone. I've got to be honest. I feel for everyone here, because, you know, it's like the FIBA, and you and I chatted about this recently. Why did FIBA have a week's break? And the deal is they had to make that decision a year ago. And they don't know that. Now, I know you're saying it's only a couple of weeks from the WNBL, but that's moving, you know, like everything, you know, the availability of courts, people, referees, the whole thing. So it's a tough one. I think the players could easily do it because, you know, they're used to doing all of that. But, you know, everything else I think would be very difficult.
Now, Brad, you said you feel for everyone in this situation. Is that why your nickname is Brad the Groper?
Oh, I resemble that remark. Okay, moving on. I'm going to go to my Rose and Rattler.
Rose and Rattler, come on.
You know what? I'm loving the banter. You just mentioned it before, you know, it's five versus eight, and then Modi comes out and says, you know, no, I haven't mentioned anything about the referees, but I bet you it's going to be in game five. And then the two owners come out and they're having their say. I'm loving this, mate. This is theatre. This is what it's all about. This series is so close. They are trying everything to just get one inch on someone, and a call can be it. And just by, you know, oh, we were against eight, and then, you know, the New Zealand guy says, so what, you don't like physicality, and he gets up and he walks out. That poor guy sitting next to him who was in that press conference with Chase Buford, oh, poor kid. I just love the theatre. I love it all. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree, but I think this whole talk about physicality is hilarious. Let's go back 10, 20 years. What about that Perth wall that had James Crawford and Andrew Vlahov and Scott Fisher?
I'm pointing to my left ear at the moment. I'm pointing to my left ear. You can't really see in there. I've got a lump in my left ear where Andrew Vlahov stood on my head. Right now, some will say it was an accident. Some will say it's not. The physicality, mate, if you went in for a layup, I'm telling you now, John Dawes, I'll never forget it in Sydney, a foul was called prior, but I was in the process of doing a layup. That foul was called, that was open ball, mate. He came in and he hit me into the following week. Right. Yeah. I got knocked out in games. Like, there was, you know, look at Andrew Gaze, the mummy. Mate, it is not even close to that.
Exactly.
Now.
I remember when Brad Davison went down and Paul Rees jumped on his back and used him as a surfboard.
Right. Yeah. But you know what? That's the way it is these days. And I just love it. I love, you know, he kicked a sign last year and all of this. Yes, everyone will say, oh, you're a Sydney Kings man. Mate, yes, Joey Wright did it in a finals, and I loved it when he just turned around and said, I'm just here to play the game. And I thought it was brilliant. You know, Joey, how do you think today's going to go? I'm just here to play the game. Okay, Joey, what do you think of the opposition? I'm just here to play a game. I love it. I love that theatre, and I think we need more of it.
Yeah. I'm inclined to agree. I'm inclined to agree, but I just think Chase has never showed any humility and has never given the opposition any credit. Right, go back to the Cairns series, whatever. Have a look at his presses. Whenever Sydney loses, he is a very sore loser. That's all I'm going to say about him.
Fair enough. All right, I just want one word answer. Well, it can be a two word because you can say their first or second name if you like. Who wins?
Heart says Breakers, head says Kings.
Mate, that's more than two words. Just mine. Yeah, I've got two words for you. Sydney Kings. Who have you got?
Oh, you've only got two words, and I've got two words for you. we're not going to use them on air because there could be kids listening. No, look, I would like to see the Breakers win because either way, one of these two franchises becomes the second most successful behind Perth Wildcats by winning their fifth championship. I don't think too many people have mentioned that. Both are on four, so this would be the fifth for one or the other. And I think for New Zealand to come from last place, I know there's been changes, but to come from last place to win the championship would be just the most amazing story. So
I was asked. I'm not sure if people have seen, but I've been doing this little show with Andrew Mulligan and Jack Heffron from the NBL, and it's like a 60-second thing, and they ask questions, and it's purely just to go at the opposition. I'm having a ball, right? And it's all about, like, we're the Sydney Kings and we love you and all that, right? So it's been really good. And one of the questions I've got is, what was the best story, right? Who's the better story, if the Kings win or if Sydney win? I'm sorry, if New Zealand win. Now I turn around like, Sydney, who cares about New Zealand? I was joking in that thing, but I got to say, to come from last spot, this could even, like, Tasmania last year was a great story. This could even, last spot, they were in Tasmania for the last two seasons or whatever it was, lose their coach, get an assistant coach, which for us was unproven. Is this going to work? He was just a lunatic running up and down the sideline, right? And to him, they love him. And I said it just before, get on that presser if people hasn't listened to it and listen to what he talks about Abercrombie. That tells me you go back to the locker room and you go, man, I will run through a brick wall for that guy. And they look like he abuses the hell out of him. I'm on the sidelines. Modi rips into him. They're like, yep, and they move on. He has got that team in such a great space.
I just back up because I'm really curious about that. So he does rip into him. He doesn't.
Oh, hell yeah.
Because he loves him. But
it's good ripping into it. You know, like, what are you doing? What are you doing that for? You know what I mean? And then they just move on. It was New Zealand when New Zealand were in Illawarra. I don't know. It would have been before Christmas. And I'm sitting there and I'm watching the game and I go to one of the timeouts and Illawarra went on a run and I listen to his timeouts and I actually went on air and went, New Zealand are for real. They are for real. The way he has got them, and they came out and went bang in the second half, like Illawarra just – now, forget it was Illawarra that had a shocking year. Yeah. But the fact that he had them on a string, I remember saying, this team's going. They are top three for sure. And obviously, by then, it looked like they were going to be. Mm-hmm. But I just think he was my pick for the coach of the year by far. Congratulations, 40. No argument there. Well, no. But to me, what he's done is been unbelievable. And I love watching him. And, you know, for me, geez, if I'm a new franchise or if if New Zealand aren't tying him down, oh, man, I'd be zero. Brisbane, I would have thrown the bloody book at him. You know what I mean? So anyway, mate.
Brisbane, that's an interesting topic for another time.
Yeah, well, they've signed their new coach, but the GM's walked out. So, buddy, thank you, my man.
Been a pleasure.
And to everyone.
After we've got some results from these games.
Absolutely. Look out and we look forward to seeing you next time on the Brad and Body. Make sure you look after us on socials. Get us with some feedback and it's great to be back. And remember, go the WNBL and go the NBL. We're loving playoffs.
So, Brad, are you finally going to get your lazy ass down to Kudos Bank Arena and watch Game 5 or are you going to just sit back in your lounge room?
Is it played at Kudos? Ha ha ha.